Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday evening, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for tonight's show are Robert Brining and Jeremy Dunn. They'll be taking your calls and speaking on the topic of the week. You're encouraged to call in and share some of your life experiences with us. The number to call is 347-215-9442. That number again, 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause I Am Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and happy Sunday. This is Robert Brining. I am your host. Welcome to Pause I Am Radio. My co-host Jeremy Dunn will be off for this evening. He had a prior engagement he had to take care of, so he'll be back next week. I'm really excited. Tonight we have a great guest gone, David Caponia. You can check out his website at www.davidcaponia.com. It's in the chat room. You can check that out there. A very interesting fella, and he actually writes a blog on pause.com, and you can check that out there at pause. I'll actually have him come on and give you that exact address to his blog. But he's already on the line, so I'm just going to go ahead and bring him through. Hello, David, are you there? Hello, David?
Hello?
Okay, maybe he's not there. So I'll have David, if that's you in the 920 area code, give us a call back. Okay, makes it a little weird. All right, so we'll be waiting for him to call back. Tonight we're going to touch on a couple topics. One thing is he just recently had an article written that he was mentioned in Pause Magazine that talks a little bit about what they call wasting syndrome. And for some people who don't know, people with HIV sometimes experience this. And what it is an involuntary loss of more than 10% of your body weight, plus more than 30 days of either diarrhea or weakness of fever. Wasting is to disease progression and death. Losing just 5% of body weight can have the same effects. Wasting is still a problem for people with AIDS today. And that's something that we don't really see a lot in the AIDS community, advertised or, you know, people being interviewed. I think we have him back on, and that's something that he's going to touch on. So, Dave Caponia, welcome. Hello, Dave, are you there? Okay, I'm not getting him for some reason. He's not coming through. David, are you there? Hello, David. David? I can hear him. David, you're on. I don't know why I'm not getting him for some reason. He's going to have to try to call back. Dave, call back again. I don't know what the situation is. I don't know why it's not connecting. I can kind of hear him. I heard him coughing for a little bit. That's kind of weird. So as I'm waiting for him to give me a call back in again, to go back on the AIDS wasting, it's something that we really don't see a lot of stories on. And I honestly, for someone who I've been diagnosed since 2001, and I didn't even know, you know, too much about AIDS wasting, and I have HIV, so I'm kind of going to be learning a lot from this, too. I think this may be him.
Okay, David, yeah, I'm on the phone. Hi.
Hi, David. How are you?
Yes. I came in a little late.
Okay. Were you calling from another number?
I just overheard what you were saying. Yeah, it's you were giving an explanation of wasting.
Wait a minute. That wasn't you calling in, right?
No. What, was that somebody else?
No, I had somebody from a 920 area code calling in right away, and I thought it was you.
Oh, no, I'm
and I tried to go to them like three times, and I couldn't get to them. That was
okay.
Kind of weird. So maybe you can explain that a little bit better than what I did.
Well, I had been taking Xeret for a while, which is no longer on the market because they've upgraded to these protease inhibitors and I don't even know what they're calling them now, but I was on Xeret, I was on AZT, I was diagnosed in 93, and then I got liver disease, and that's when I really saw the wasting start to happen. And it was around that time, and I don't know if it had anything to do with the fact that I had liver disease, or maybe it was just compounded upon the fact that I was on Zerit for a while, and I also had the liver disease, which also, you know, depleted the fat in my body. So there was a lot of things going on. My teeth started decaying, and I didn't have a cavity in my mouth until I was like 33, and then all of a sudden I went into the dentist, who was also my boyfriend at the time. My boyfriend was my dentist at the time, and I had like 3 cavities, and he was like, "What's going on?" And you know, with 3 cavities all in a row, and then my face started, you know, depleting. But and then I was diagnosed with liver disease in 2004. And then I went on disability, and then, you know, and that's how we're going to get it. You know, that's when I lost my job, and, you know, I was sick with all these other things like a stroke, which happened as a cause of the liver disease. I had hyperbolic tension or portal hypertension. Is what they call it, portal hypertension. It's basically like your arteries being clogged, going from like out of your liver into your liver. And it wasn't like hepatitis A, B, or C, which people usually have when they have liver disease. So, you know.
So you're saying that you were diagnosed with HIV in 93.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm going all over the place. But
no, no, that's fine. So you were diagnosed with HIV in 93.
Yeah. And then,
how old
and
were
then
you?
I was 21. So
I
was
that
just...
I was diagnosed.
Right, okay. And, yeah, and that was a whole different time. I mean, there wasn't... They didn't put me on medication. You know, and the first doctor I went to said, you know, and I didn't have any support system whatsoever. So it's really, I was listening to the interview with Brian from Sin just earlier, and, you know, it's like, it's a whole different world now, you know,
right.
And I kind of felt like, you know, I didn't know anybody else that was HIV positive, and it was looked on as shameful. And I wasn't about to tell anyone. I told some close friends of mine. But I also knew that, you know, the world was opening up for me. Like, I got this job at Ralph Lauren, and I was about to graduate. And it was like, you know, the world was my oyster in a way. But at the same time, I didn't know if I was going to make it till 30, you know.
Right.
So, but... But basically the doctor said to me, he goes, "Oh, you just have to be in healthy denial, and we're not going to put you on any medications." And so I went along, and then I got another doctor with NYU, who's a much better doctor that was dealing with a lot of infectious diseases and stuff. And but I wasn't on any medication, and I got tuberculosis in a year and a half. And so, you know, I was... Well, no, I guess it was a little, I guess maybe it was 24 when I got tuberculosis, and then that jumped right into PCP. But I hadn't been medicated at any point in time. But those were the days when they didn't know if you should go on meds, because those were the days when people were like, AZT is a killer,
right. You
know, and they're like, it was just a really different time. And I was kind of in a place where, before that, I thought I was not, I felt like I was, you know, I had passed, I had, like, I had an eighth grade art school teacher who died of AIDS, and that's all I knew about AIDS, you know, and
right.
I felt like, you know, that was back in eighth grade, and you know, I just felt like, you know, everybody had died in the 80s, and it was now it was 1990, and I was in New York, and everything was going to be fine. And so it was just a, you know, it was just a different time. But then today I'm finding out that people are still getting infected. Like, it's, you know, it's so I'm kind of, you know, it's not, it's kind of depressing in a way to me, when there is so much stability in the AIDS community and people are, I mean, there still is a lot of shame, but I just, but I think, you know, especially now when women are getting infected as much as men are. I mean, I know there was definitely an increase in gay men because of people being very promiscuous and stuff like that, and I've been down that road, and I, you know, but I was already positive, you know, so, and I was always safe after that, like, it, and the other thing with me is I never did anything, I was never that online kind of person,
right.
Like, the other thing that, like, I would go out, I would meet guys, I would go home with them, and then I would tell them I was HIV positive, and they would be like, okay, well, I've got to wear a condom or something, you know. But I never had a problem, basically. I mean, when I was in my 20s, you know, I was pretty good looking, I guess. And it was like I never had a problem going home with anybody. And so it wasn't. I mean, people were like, "Wow, I'm going home with that guy." Yeah, you know,
right,
so
they didn't care.
They didn't care. It was like a score for them, you know.
Right.
But it's a whole different world now after the launch of my website and all of the stuff that I've been through, and after being in a 10-year relationship which ended. Being out and trying to socialize now in these, you know, like with Sin and, you know, social networks and stuff like that. It's just, and I find it very, for me, it's not as easy because a lot of people haven't dealt with wasting and stuff like that, and they've only been diagnosed for a few years, or they, you know, I mean, yes, I'm one in a million, but I guess I'm just very open about what I'm doing. I have a website. I'm, you know, I worked in fashion for many years, and so it's like most people are gay that work in fashion, and so I didn't think I had to hide anything.
Right.
Yeah.
You also, and because you said you did work in design and stuff like that, and you graduated from Parsons, right?
Yes.
And I think that's pretty phenomenal, pretty great thing to do. I mean, I know the designing thing isn't something that you do anymore, but do you think it's something that you may want to do in the future?
Well, yeah, that was the whole intention, was that I was going to, I mean, actually, I was just, initially, I was going to take off the summer when I left work, and I was going to go on short-term disability, and my main concern was getting a new liver, and I thought I would have to go find out where to get on a list. I went to Cleveland Clinic, and I was also, I mean, Cleveland Clinic was the main one, and then also I was doing tests at Columbia Presbyterian, and I was on the road to have a liver transplant, but they did all these tests on me, and they were like, well, we could give you a new liver, but we don't really think it's going to solve the problem, because I didn't really have the same type of liver disease that everybody else had, I guess, because I had this portal hypertension going on, and it wasn't like hepatitis B or C or whatever. And, you know, because I know Larry Kramer had, I mean, I mentioned that on my website about how, you know, I was introduced to Larry Kramer on the phone, and he was very helpful, but he had hepatitis B, and it was a whole different scenario for him. So anyway, and then all of a sudden I'm talking in circles, but I was planning on eventually going back to work, you know, after getting the liver transplant, like returning to work and hopefully being back. I took the summer off, and then I was going to go back in the fall. And then one thing happened after the other, like the liver disease then turned into a stroke. Then from the stroke, I had like a mental disorder, which caused me to have such a high rate of anxiety that I couldn't be left alone, like for a year and a half. Like I needed someone around me. You know, I really can't explain it, but
right.
And I didn't get into that in I haven't finished that part of the chapter that's on that on the website. And
now, what was the time span? How many years did it go from like your diagnosis and you went through all these different multiple illnesses? Like, what's the span?
Well, it was like 10 years of an illness, but it was probably lasted like 2.5 years. Or 3 years total, but like
right.
My therapist said to me, like, you've suffered through so much, and like I had, I was in and out of the hospital so many times, and like on death's door, I was like in the ICU. I had this, at one point I had a feeding tube in me 24 hours a day.
Wow.
Or just, well, no, I just had it on at night, right? And that was giving me, because I was losing so much weight, and I basically had no fat on my body. Like there was nothing left of any of my fat. And, you know, I posted some of those, images on my blog on Pause about when I had like no facial fat at all and everything. So,
I saw that the before and after that you did.
Well, no, even worse, like when I was really ill, it,
okay.
it was even worse before that. Like there was, it was just, so anyway,
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I mean, to go through all that you've been through, going into the hospital and dealing with all these different illnesses, there's something that you're here for. You know what I mean? Like, there's a
reason.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't
and
know.
And it's amazing,
I mean,
and I applaud you, because you're one of those people who give hope to other people who are sitting back going, I don't know if I can deal with this. And for you to go through, you know, what they call wasting, and to share openly about it, I'm sure you had to have tons of feedback on that from people.
I did. And that's another thing I have to say is that, you know, there's still a lot of people out there that are in that were diagnosed, and they were taking Zaret, they were on other toxic medications. Like I was on Primaquine and clindamycin, which is for PCP, for like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years before I was switched to Mepron. And now now my T cells are over 500. My viral load is like, I was, you know, back in those days, like they didn't even test viral load. You know,
right.
And so anyway, but so my T cells have reached over 500, and technically, I guess I don't have AIDS, and so I don't have to take anything for PCP, which is great because it was very expensive to buy Mepron, first of all, and but before that, I was on Primaquine and clindamycin, which were I don't know how much they cost because my insurance was paying for it, at the time, which was another insurance. But anyway, they were very, very toxic. And so that probably caused my liver disease and the Zerit. And then, you know, and then I was taking, you know, a lot of meth at the time, when at the end of, like, recreational drugs.
Right.
And, like,
I've been down that road
at the end of the 90s, early 2000, whatever.
So a lot of people have contacted you saying, you know, that they're going through it and they appreciate you being public about it?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, they, and I don't think they're as out about it. I mean, it's just, like, I kind of, like, wrote, I just said, you know what, I guess I'm the sacrificial lamb, you know, because it's like, I just can't, like, hide, you know, I'm just, you know, it's definitely, it's helping people, but then at the same time, in a lot of ways, I feel like I don't feel like I can relate to a lot of people, like, I'm being contacted, I don't have any close friends, because a lot of my close friends, they're not positive. They're either, you know, they're not positive. They're either, they might be women, they might be gay guys or straight guys or whatever, but they're, you know, I'm just friends that I met in the fashion industry that I've been friends with for a long time. They're not. You know, so it's new for me to, like, experience this this bonding that's going on between these gay, you know, like, sin or whatever. But at the same time, I don't really think they I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I don't really think they can get it. But I am finding outside of that, people are contacting me through Facebook and like from around the country.
Right.
So, and, you know, and I'm in, but they're much older. I'm not older. They're older than I am. They're in their 40s. And, you know, so, I mean, I'm 38, so, you know, I'm almost 40.
That's good. At least, you know what I mean? Because I know for me, the part I love the most is getting the feedback from people who are going, I was looking for this, and I wish this was around. You know, like the
yeah.
people who are long-term survivors, and
yeah.
they're like, you know, I wish that there was a site like yours when I was newly diagnosed, because when I went out there, I was always getting cruised on all the sites, and I wasn't looking for stuff
right.
like that.
Right,
so,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like when people... maybe who are, you know, a longer-term survivor than I am, come back and give me good feedback about something that I do, it makes me appreciate it more. So I know that you get that fulfillment, too.
Yes. No, I definitely do.
You know, there's a caller who's sitting online, and I just don't want to ignore him anymore because he's been
sitting
there.
Okay.
So this is who I thought you were earlier. So.
Oh, okay.
Caller with area code 920, you're on the air.
Robert, thank you. That was me who called. I couldn't make my computer work here, the program. Not wanting to miss it, I dialed the number, and when you said hello, I didn't know you were talking to me. There's two times I dialed, and then after a few seconds, the automated voice said, thank you, goodbye. So then I would dial again. So the third time, of course, you were talking to your guest. Anyway, I'm Jack in Green Bay.
Hey, Jack. How are you?
Fine. I just... A real fast question. Are we supposed to be able to get this program online to not have to pay long-distance charges on this telephone number?
No, yeah, you can listen to it right on the radio show page.
Okay, I haven't figured that out. That's what happens to us old people.
You go to blogtalkradio.com/PauseIM.
Okay. Well, once we get my brief little comment, I'll try to find that while I listen. I'm on the long-distance line. I had gotten... what I just typed in, because I had to enter a password or whatever. I was entering a little bio. I had gotten really ill in late 82 and struggling to build a major radio station as the founder, having run for the Congress, done a lot of things, the legislature and my Republican right-wing opponent finally figuring out I was gay. having people go door to door. So having gone through so much shit, but the point is, I didn't get tested until late 84, early 85. And then, fortunately, my live-in boyfriend at the time tested negative, I positive. And back then, we didn't know, kissing, whatever, you know. And I was so paranoid that I might give it to him that in the end, within the year, he, you know, he moved out. He's still a dear friend. But I just, as somebody who founded a couple major radio stations, actually Ben and I, then my live-in partner, I said, we must do a radio talk show about HIV/AIDS. And he said, if we lose one more client, you know, we'll be bankrupt. But from 84 until I retired in 98, every year I'd bring in one of the world experts in AIDS, HIV, who ended up being my physician. But he wanted me to go on AZT. And my former press secretary, who was at Columbia University, he was the only guy I could tell I was HIV. And from 85 until 7 years ago, he kept saying, no, they'll kill you. And then I started losing weight, went from 170 down to 135. And I finally went on Combivir and Sustiva, and immediately zero viral load. When I read your story, it was so inspiring what you've been through, Robert, because I've never had a health issue. I was chairman of a science department in the late 60s, so I've kept up on health issues. And what I did in 82, when I got diarrhea and felt like I was going to die and didn't have a doctor and was broke, I went on a 10-day juice fast, cleaned my system out, and by the fourth day, I felt like $1 million. And from then until I went, or, you know, got tested and ultimately went on antivirals, all these years I've never had one issue except that I get tired, which is why the FAA finally found out that I'm HIV positive, so they denied my, I have a plane and I'm a pilot, been flying since 62. So I can't fly my plane until I go through loads of kind of bullshit tests to prove that I'm cognitively sound. But the bottom line is there's some of us who have been positive since 82, 83, but we had nobody to talk to. And seeing your site has been so inspiring. So that's why I wanted to tune in tonight essentially just listen. And find, you know, I'm 66 years old. I play handball at the YMCA twice a week. I work out every day. So I've been blessed have somebody watching over me. But thank you for your site.
Thank you.
It's very inspiring. And to your guests, thank you for taking time. I'll have to look up your blog and start reading it just to gain more insights and inspiration.
Well, thanks a lot for calling in tonight, Jack.
Thank you for listening. Now, one last time, I've got the site up. What do I type
you're
in?
You're going to type in the blogtalkradio.com/posim.
Okay. Well, thank you much, and I'll try to get you online. Otherwise, I'll just stay on the phone, if that's okay.
You got it.
And listen to you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
David, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, sounds good. I have a question in here from Tom Donahue, from Who's Positive. He wants to know what you think. If you think that it's hopeful that we'll find a cure for AIDS in our lifetime?
Oh, God.
You like that?
Yeah. In my lifetime and
In your lifetime.
I really don't know. I don't know. I really can't answer that. I think that the best way is to just learn all you know about being safe and not, you know, don't and just I don't know.
I'm hopeful
I don't really
that.
Know. I think it's really tricky. And I really don't. I really don't know. My whole thing is like prevention.
Right.
You know, and just stop getting these, you know, stop getting people infected.
Right.
You know.
Well, another good question he has here, he goes, since you are, you know, somewhat in
the
media.
I mean, come on, like, how can you, like.
Right.
Anyway, he has another question.
Yeah, he goes, since you're in the media, how much responsibility do you think that the media has on keeping HIV and AIDS in the spotlight? And I agree with the second part where it seems like the only time you ever hear about it is on December 1st. And even then, I don't even hear about it.
Yeah, I think it can be much, much better. I think that, you know, I think people him and haw around it. It's like even when, you know, like when the president gave his first press conference or whatever, and he was more about how, you know, cancer touched everyone's, you know, everyone's lives and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, well, I mean, yeah, and it did touch his life because his mother died of cancer, but it's like there's a lot of other, you know, cancer to me is like, you know, people used to, back in the 40s, people would like whisper it. My mother's much older, and like, you know, you would never say cancer, and now, you know, they're wearing pink hats all over the place. It's like, I want HIV to be at that place. I don't want there to be any shame. And I don't think there is enough. I just think, you know, like I was in a store in like a few years ago, like checking out, and there was a group of guys, like teenagers, and they, like my stomach was, you know, my stomach was, I had a lot of ascites, like belly fluid. And so they were looking at me sideways, and they thought like I was pregnant. And he goes, "Oh no, he's got that disease or something, or like he's got AIDS or something like that." And it was just, you know, it's like you don't want to hear that, obviously, you know. So it's just, you know, just to be so rude. I just, you know. It's like
I agree with you because I mean, like you said, I see a lot of everything all over about.
Well,
I mean,
especially
I'm not picking a particular cause, but breast cancer, you know what I mean, is out there more. And I think because it's, I don't want to say it and sound, I don't know, come off a different way, but I guess it's because that affects more women. And women seem to be, and that, they don't understand that women are also getting infected with HIV and AIDS, but since it's still not viewed as a heterosexual
disease, and that's my whole call, too, is that, like, I don't want more people to get infected, but in a way, like, that's the only way they're going to really see it is that, I mean, like, I'm going to my parents, like, you know, now that I'm working or interning at PAWS, like, I'm saying, you know, our editor-in-chief is, like, she's positive, and there, you know, there's, and, you know, Mavro Brown, and, you know, all these women are getting they're getting diagnosed, and they shouldn't be. We don't want it to turn into this, like, this all-encompassing thing, but it is. And it's not treated that well at all.
You know what I mean? Like, when you see, like I'm saying, like, you go in the stores now, and you see pink ribbons on every cereal box.
Yeah.
And tasty right. Cake and Twinkie, and it should really be like that also for, I think, AIDS and everything like that. They should,
yeah.
You know, alternate.
I mean,
it
could be, and so I guess that could be something we could all work on, you know.
Right.
Do you
think that the shame that is placed on people with HIV, do you think that's why a lot more people don't come out more and are accepting of it, and why people, like, today don't accept it and still consider it dirty?
Yeah, definitely. I do. In a way, I was kind of like, you know, I go to a group called Friends Indeed. I'm giving them, you know, a plug. And in a way, like, I felt ashamed that, because they service people that have cancer and also HIV. It originally was just Friends Indeed was just like a just for people with HIV, but now they've taken on cancer and they basically welcome anyone that's suffering from a chronic illness and stuff like that. But in a way, I was kind of like, well, you know, you didn't ask for cancer. It just happened. But in the same way, you know, you're still suffering even if you have HIV. And there are some people that didn't ask for HIV. They might have been hemophiliacs, or they might have been nurses who got pricked by a needle or something like that. But it does feel, I mean, I still have a feeling of shame. Like, what did I do? You know, why was I so stupid, or why did I do this, or why, you know?
Yeah, I felt a lot of shame in the beginning, but a lot of that had to do with me being raised in a Catholic background, too.
Well, I, the same thing.
Yeah, so, you
I
know
mean,
what I mean? A lot of that was fed into my head.
Yeah, so I can relate to you on that, but anyway.
Right. Now, you started your website, actually, as a way for, because I find it interesting how and why you started it. You started it, actually, for your friends and family, right?
Yes.
To keep up on you because you lived on the other side of the country, right?
Yeah,
so they
just,
were not in New York
anymore.
Just
so everybody, you know, just so like, you know, or whoever wanted to find me. Well, no, it was basically for my friends and family that weren't like living it day to day. Like, so I could explain, because there was a lot to explain about it. Like, I went through so much in such a short period of time. And it was a way to explain it, make it kind of humorous in a way at the same time. And I enjoyed writing it, but it was all, and then it turned into, and it was apparently, it was just going to be like a letter that I wrote basically. And then it just blossomed into this big thing that, and I was doing it through my my cognitive therapist, and it was part of my cognitive therapy to like write to research how to do a blog, how to do a website, and I said, well, you know, I don't, and I said, well, maybe, and then people started reacting to it, and I just put it out there, and I put my name on it so that whoever wanted to find me could just punch in my name in Google and find me. And then more and more people started. Now I have like over 3,000 hits like a month.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, because I'm on the POS blogs, so it's also helping me too.
Right. What is your URL for your blog on POS so people can go and check you out there too?
blogs.pos.com at Dave.
And then they can also go to pos.com and look under the blog section too.
Yeah.
And you're the one that
stayed. Not explaining it right.
Well, that's cool. If anyone else out there is listening and they'd like to call in and chat with me and David, you can give us a call at 347-215-9442. Or if you have Skype, you can click the Click to Talk button, and it is free. The one thing that it's done for me, you know, my status and going through, because you said you went through a whole bunch of stuff in one, you know, shot, one time period of your life during your transition or whatnot. I went through the same thing in like 4 years. I went through, you know, coming out of the closet, then dealing with drug addiction, and then losing my father, and then 6 months later being diagnosed with HIV and AIDS. And in a way, it's kind of kick-started me, and it really made me, what's the word I want to say? It really empowered me to want to do something better with my life.
Right.
You know what I mean? And did it do the same for you?
Yeah, well, I'm still in a serious transition. I know that, and I'm kind of like letting it go, like let it, but it was a
I'm kind of kicking and screaming through the transition, like, because I kind of want the old life I had, but I know it's not right for me.
Right.
So I'm, yeah, I mean, I was kind of hesitant, but now I'm like, if I don't, there's no way I can go back to designing, like, backpacks, you know, after
right.
I've had this experience, you know. It's like, what good am I going to get out of it, you know? I mean, it was great when it was happening, and it was, you know, I was kind of, you know, just doing my thing, and, you know, but this is much more fulfilling, and I'd like to even make it more fulfilling by doing something, you know, even better. But I see, I'm still kind of sick, and
right.
Because I don't have the energy, you know, that I had before. So just going into the PAWS offices every day, I'm like, you know, it's, so I'm on these beta blockers, which really drag my energy down. So it's, you know, not to complain, but I'm
but it can be tiresome, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it is. I'm still dealing with cirrhosis. So,
right.
And see, I'm like, I want everything to be perfect and everything, but it's like, at one point, I'm just like, there's only so much I can do in a day.
So, very true.
Yes.
No matter who you are, what you have.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I used to work, like, I used to be in the office. I mean, we're talking about the old days when I used to, like, work, like, in fashion. I'd be in the office, you know, 7 days a week, and, you know, it was crazy. But I'd like to bring that into, you know, into what I'm doing now. Like, finish my blog and, you know, and or finish my website and, you know.
I think one of the best things I liked about actually going on your website and reading, you know, your stories and your blogs is you put a lot of humor into it.
Yeah, and that's, well, that was part of the thing that, because I was noticing when I was looking online about people that were giving testimonies about stuff, it was just so kind of not clinical, but it was just like I wasn't engaged. And the other thing was I'm very visual because I'm visual just because I'm, you know, a fashion designer, but at the same time I lost my sense of writing, so it's hard for me to write, but I do get the words out there. And but I wanted to bring images, and now I have videos on my blog at PAWS.com, and so I use images to illustrate my thoughts, and
I liked it. It was the one that I read. You had what's her face? Meryl Streep.
In the beginning,
yeah. It was a hoot.
And
I love the picture.
Prada.
Right. Yeah,
you know, it's just a way to like make it kind of humorous. And but then, you know, it was and also I found it, you know, when I was working with my cognitive therapist, I was like, okay, how am I going to treat this? Like, this was really, really, I mean, I was like, you know, I was talking about the chapter when I was like in the ICU, and which was a short chapter.
Right.
And I tell the little, like, I've got chills, they're multiplying or something like that. And
right.
So I was like, you know, that's how I thought of it. I mean, it was devastating. I mean, I was out for like 2 weeks, like in the ICU. Like my temperature was so high. It was like 106. I was packed in ice. I was really miserable. And most of the time I really don't remember. And I'm glad I didn't remember, but at the end of it, I did happen to, like, I was waking up by the end of it, and I wrote that little story about how it was kind of like,
it was a bunch of interns, like, all interacting. I don't know if you got to that part, but, you know, and I was just kind of relating it to back to, like, Grey's Anatomy, but, like, you know, it was, you know, so I like, found humor in it, and it was also, like, after the fact, and I was alive, and I could write, and I was, you know, I was, you know, I was very fortunate, you know, that I had made it through that.
As you go through everything and you experience things, what gives you the strength to keep going?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, what is it in there that's like, that makes
know.
You want to get up and be like, this is it. You know, like, I'm going to just do it.
I don't, some days it's not so easy, but, I mean, definitely when I had that overwhelming sense of anxiety when I was like mentally, when I had a mental disorder, there were days when I just wanted to go to sleep and not wake up. And my boyfriend at the time and my parents were living with me in New York City at the time too, for a while of it. We had a large apartment, and so they were there for a lot of it. And then I went home to visit them upstate. They live in upstate New York. It was, once I got on medication, which curbed the anxiety, I got on anti-seizure medication, and that has made life a lot better. I now live alone, and I'm kind of happy living alone.
How long have you been on meds?
Since 96 is the year, that's when Sasiva came out, right? But I was already on, it was before Sasiva came out, and they had started me on, I was on AZT, I guess maybe, I think that Sestiva probably came out at like the end of 2006 or something like that. But I started on AZT and 3TC or something like that, and there was another one. And then unfortunately my doctor jumped off a bridge and killed myself. I know, it was that was like tragic, but it, I mean, it was very tragic. And he was a great doctor, but I got this better doctor who's now been my doctor to this day from that. So
about 22 years you've been on the HIV meds.
22 years? No.
Right? Is that what you said? 80? No, not. I'm sorry.
No.
12.
No. Yeah, 12 years.
I'm counting from 86. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But what would you say to somebody like me? I've been positive since 2001, and I'm not on any kind of meds because my counts, my doctor tells me, are fine. What would you
really?
Say to somebody like, well, they've been fine. You know, my counts have always been fine, and actually the last time I went to the doctor, he told me that maybe now you should consider going on meds. I was on meds previous. So I was on the Atripla. But I had that.
Right.
I had a really bad allergic reaction to the Sativa and was in the hospital for 3 days.
Right.
So he took me back off it, and it's been about a year since I was on it. And he's like now, like thinking maybe I should start them.
Well, what's his rationale for that?
He
like, what's
that
your
viral
load?
Good time. The last time I went, my viral load was at 22,000. And it was never at that before. Before that,
That's high.
Right. That's what I was concerned about, but he said
should be non-detectable.
Right. Well, let's see. It's now at 22,000, but before that, it was at the highest. It was that was maybe 4,000 at the highest. It was always like they stayed right in the same numbers, didn't move at all for about 7 years. And, you know, just recently he's like, you know, maybe we should start. And for someone like me, I get kind of scared to start doing medications because I hear of all the side effects.
Yeah,
and
well, there's, there's definitely the side effects, but you don't want to have any complications, you know.
Right. For me, I just it's weird.
You know, you can't ask me. I mean, I leave it to my doctor to give me the meds.
Right.
I do. I mean, I'm on what am I on? Truvada and Kaletra.
Okay.
Yeah. And that hasn't caused me any side effects whatsoever. I'm just everything else I have is more a condition of the liver disease or the bone loss that I'm having. I have osteoporosis. I have got wasting. I've got neuropathy. You know, but
and I applaud you, man. I really do. I mean, that inspires me that you go through all of that.
Well, I know, but it's it's gonna. Well, and that's the other thing is, like, when going back to my website is, like, I was just trying to share my story. And originally I was just trying to explain everything that I could about it in, like, layman's terms to people that, you know, that knew me, that, you know, I could, you know. But then I started seeing that people were discovering my site that didn't know about it. But then at the same time, I didn't want people to get scared of me being so, so sick. And then they would like turn the other way and they would freak out. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. But I mean, if you find it inspiring, then that's great. You know, it's that's why I'm like the sacrificial lamb, and I'm also, you know, just like, you know. But I mean,
it is very inspiring, and it empowers, you know, other people, I'm sure, when they read it, to know that they can get up every day. You know, it doesn't matter how crappy you think life is. Be grateful you have a breath.
Because David felt worse than you did.
Not what I said. Not what I said, David.
Anyway.
You're funny. We're down to the last 7 minutes, and one of the things I wanted to talk about,
okay,
which we talked in a little earlier about the wasting process and things like that, but you actually went and got a treatment done to your face to actually fill it in. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I've had Sculptra done, which is it absorbs into your skin after like 6 months. And I went for treatment many times in New York to a great dermatologist, but you had to go repeatedly. And I had so much, basically there was like no fat in my face. And so I would have to go like every 6 weeks for a refill. And it was getting pretty expensive, you know. It was like, I don't even know how much I spent. I just kept paying and paying and paying. And then I decided, and this was after I broke up with my boyfriend, and like I was, you know, and I had, and I was just in transition of everything, and all of a sudden I looked at my face and I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this, like having something permanent done. And I had known about going outside of the country because it's only out, you can only do it in Rio de Janeiro or in Europe or in Mexico. And I thought, well, Mexico's pretty easy. You just fly to San Diego and you just go over the border. So what I had done was PMMA, and that is a permanent solution, which is basically plastic. It's these little tiny, tiny, tiny beads of plastic. It's like a gel, and they put it into your skin, and they kind of compound it. It's just they kind of massage it into your skin, and then it sets. And it adheres to the into the skin tissue, and then it sets permanently. And
sure.
It's and it was very painful when it was done. And I mean, for me, it was very painful. And I got a lot of, I mean, people were saying to me when I wrote that first blog, like, someone commented, they were like, oh, you're scaring people away. And I was like, well, you know, I'm just telling, you know, my story. It was painful, but I lived through it, you know. It's like, and I knew there was going to be good results. So I was very happy with it. And I feel much better. And I don't feel like people are staring at me. And
well, that's important because, you know, the way.
Yeah, because it was. Yeah, because I was walking around like, you've got AIDS, or you know, you have cancer or something like that. You know, it's like there's something going on with that guy, you know.
Right, and if you're not happy with yourself and the way that you are, and if you don't have that confidence, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's very important, especially somebody living, you know, with HIV and AIDS. And I'm looking
right.
at the article that was in the POS magazine, and I see the picture that they have in the middle. And they, you know, they have parts of his face with the needles going in, and it says normalcy, confidence, peace, and freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel like you got all that back now that you, you know, went through the treatment?
Yeah, definitely.
And you
definitely
feel more fuller?
I definitely do. I mean, I haven't been on any dates lately.
See that? David is single, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right.
Do you do any speaking engagements or anything like that?
I did speak once for Friends Indeed. They have like a I did speak once at a high school,
mm-hmm.
With Friends Indeed, and I would want to go back and do that at some point. And for like a high school, like a, you know, it was like a, in the city, a public high school.
Yeah, that's cool. Cause that's actually one of the things that I wanted to do was, you know, eventually when I get the time to do it is I would love to go in and speak to these kids that are in high school that are not getting the correct information. You know what I mean? I know. Cause when I was in school, I didn't get the correct information. And if I had somebody come in
right.
and tell me
yeah.
the truth, it would be more important. That's why I was asking if you did any of the speaking because that's important to me. We're down to about 2 minutes. Real quick, before we end, I want to know, do you just joined the site, my website, POS
I
Am?
Yes, I did.
What do you think?
Well, I think it's...
put you on the spot.
I just joined. I haven't really looked at it that much. I mean, there's a great... I mean, it's, I don't know. Yeah, you are putting me on the spot.
Okay. All right. I'll let you alone. It's great, he said.
It's great.
Yeah. Dave Saponia, thanks for joining us. And you can come back anytime you have anything going on or you'd like to talk about it. You can find more about David at www.davidcapogna.com or you can find him on pos.com under Dave's POS blog. David, you have a great night, and thanks for calling in tonight. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good night, man.
Bye.
I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the POS I Am radio show. Remember, we are part of the POS I Am community, which can be found at www.posiam.com. We will be back here on Wednesday at 2 p.m. with the founder and executive director of Hope's Voice and Does HIV Look Like Me campaign, Todd Murray. Very thrilled to have him on. And we will also have on next Sunday's show, Christopher Murray, who is an HIV-positive therapist and writer. And I'm really thrilled. Is one of the problems I have is I can't find women to come on the radio show. And I want to show the women out there that are HIV-positive that there's hope out there and you're not alone. So I was so excited that I was able to land an interview with Sherry Lewis, who is the lead singer, used to be the lead singer of the Ramones, and she will be on sometime in April. But I just want to put it out there so if there's women listening, that you know that there's hope, and I'm going to bring as many women as I can. I'm still working on some other women like Marvelyn Brown. But you folks have a great night. You can learn more about my co-host, who will be back Sunday at positivelyspeaking.com, And you can learn more about me at the PodZion community at PodZion.com. Have a great night, and thanks for tuning in.